Welcome, everybody. That's right. It's our weekly show. It's me, the D-O-double-G, Randall Johnson, alongside a beautiful Sarah Marie, Mrs. Big News, Tom from Tom and Tom Racing. And as you can see, joining us for our weekly show, we are honored to have the king of the mountain, Mark Patterson. That's right, everybody. He's there. I feel like he's the most, like, underground celebrity in horse racing. And I mean underground in the nicest way, Mark. You are like, I don't know. If you don't know Mark, it's like Mark. Knowing Mark Patterson is like knowing the secret handshake.
The last time you called me a cult figure, you called me a cult figure, and I'm underground.
Well, okay, cult figure.
You're fucking beating it clubs like
some cults are underground.
I thought you were in a bunker, Mark. I thought you were in a bunker. You're not in a bunker anymore. You got out of the bunker.
Last time he was in a bunker.
I've been called a cult figure. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I get where you're coming from.
All right, so sorry, Mark. Cult figure. But, Mark, welcome.
Oh, sorry, dude.
Always a pleasure for us to have you. It's awesome, man. Like I feel like Mark is like one of us. I would call
him. It's my honor.
He might get offended. He's a cult clown. Can we give him the name, the cult clown?
Cult clown. I love it.
There you go. Now, Mark's the cult clown. All right.
I'm an honorary clown?
We're honorary. You're full membership now.
Well, you know what? I get so many texts from fans, and it's like it's crazy now how many I get. I get maybe 70 or 80 a day, and I answer every one because I put my number out on the air, and you guys know the whole spiel. And yeah. I can't just talk the talk. I got to walk the walk, and I enjoy going back and forth with them. But I have to cue myself as to their existence, like where they're from, what they're all about and stuff. And you guys, it's pretty simple. Sarah Clown, Randy Clown, Tom Clown. I know. So then I know right away.
And we have that other clown hanging around. He couldn't be on tonight, but we'll talk about him later.
Topic for another day.
We'll talk about the clown clown.
Urbanic obsessed clown.
What did I walk into here?
I know.
You're talking about AJ.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about AJ Ryder.
Yep. Of course we are talking about
AJ. I'm over
AJ.
That. I'm so over it.
Good. Glad you are for everybody out there that's listening. AJ and Mark had a little bit of a feud. And we actually always make a joke about it when I make AJ say somebody's defrauding the public. Because that was a rude statement he said about you. But we won't.
And then ended up losing the bet. And go back.
And then he came on. We had a wager
on which horse was going to beat which horse straight up. In the West Virginia Derby, and also whether or not I had correctly prognosticated the favorite. And AJ was wrong on both counts, and his part of the bet was he had to wear clown makeup, go full clown for like 1 week, and I showed mercy.
You let him off the hook.
He showed one time as a clown, and he was a sad clown.
He was a
I couldn't stand watching him anymore.
Well, he's also a sad man.
It's all over.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was a sad clown.
And for my part of the bet, I would have had to have brought him on the show. And you guys know I don't fly anything but solo, so it was pretty darn sure I was going to win.
Yeah.
I was, for your sake, I was hoping that he was not going to win that bet career, really.
Yeah.
But let's get into it. We always do the news. We do the race recaps. And then we have Hot Jockey of the Week, of course, sponsored by Fantac, fan-tac.com. That's right. Fantac, we do a Hot Jockey of the Week. And then I'm going to ask Mark 5 questions. The cult clown, the cult favorite of everybody. I'm going to ask him 5 questions that I think people will get a kick out of.
Stay tuned for that. All right. Yes.
You know, I went too personal on last night's opener because I had to pay tribute to my mom. And, you know, it got a little bit dicey. I wasn't too sure I could hold it together at the outset because I was really close to my mom and I miss her very badly. On a daily basis for a lot of reasons. And I maybe took a deeper dive than I should have into my psyche and some of my history. And you know what? I barely emerged without breaking down on the other side, but I'm glad that I did it. And now you're telling me you're going to fire some more stuff at me. So I can lay my soul bare. Oh, once again, you're going to lay it all bare again. Huh?
Yeah. Because we're those guys, Mark. We're going to be like, get over it. Just say it. No, we're not.
We
love you. And listen, it's
they're going to be
these
fun.
Are definitely fun.
They're fun questions.
These are like those games that were behind you. Remember our first time?
Was all right. Yeah, like Candyland and the Game of Life.
Yeah.
So who's your jockey of the week, Sarah Clown?
Well, no, Tom does the jockey of the week.
Tom does the jockey of the week.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why they keep me around.
Oh, gee. I wonder who it might be.
It's his only job here. He just sits there.
The only thing we give Tom to do.
I sit here, I look pretty, and I get sponsored by www.fansac.com. The hot jockey of the week. Tom's Brandy makes fun of me because I say www.fantac.com. He seems to think people can just go to fantac.com. Well, but
and apparently now Tom is the pretty clown. So,
well, in his mind. well, let's face it, Mark. I don't know who's more internet.
It's a very tight call because Tom is one fine-looking man. I'm not going to dispute that. But I do dig Sarah with the glasses on, so it's kind of a deadie.
I'm not even mentioned. It's kind of weird.
No, not at all. No, you don't.
It's all right.
All right.
So let's get into it. Sarah and Mark, obviously, you're along for the ride here. We talk. We have fun with it. It's our weekly show, and we're going to get into some stuff with you later on, but feel free. Let's get into it. What
does
this mean?
I can't talk until the appointed time? We're doing the
news. We're doing the news.
This means I can't talk until the appointed time?
Well, the good thing
you
is...
You ever watch my show, man?
As you feel.
If you watch my show...
You can maybe not talk over her when she's doing it. This is why Mark works alone on his desk.
You guys have not watched my show, evidently.
That's right. When Mark was coming on, I was going to say, wait, there's... Three people is too many for Mark. It should just be Sarah and Mark.
You know,
he doesn't want to talk to me or Randy. He just wants to talk to Sarah. We should just go in the background, Randy.
You can tell me just hang out.
Here's an old school term. I was a gunner in basketball. There weren't enough basketballs. One basketball, I'm going to shoot it. I mean, you know.
Green light over half court. Mark Patterson was the green light over half court. You pass the game over half court, get box somebody out.
I used to tell my teammates, there are going to be times when I'm double teamed, triple teamed. This is the norm, guys, because I'm the money. And throwing me the rock is not exactly the correct thing to do. But I need you to remember, you're never exactly wrong.
That is true. Well, no, I think I've been exactly wrong a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, throw me the rock.
I think a lot of
with defenders draped over me, it's never totally wrong to throw me the rock.
All right, give Mark the rock. Sarah, get into the news.
All right, let's talk about the news. We'll get real briefly into the Derby, really, really briefly here, because we're going to go into the Derby a bit further after we get through Hot Jockey. But Secret Oath won the Kentucky Oaks. Super excited, and come to the Kentucky Derby, where we had the second biggest long shot in the history of the Kentucky Derby win, and that was Rich Strike at 80-1. Now, the biggest long shot, I guess I should say, to win the Kentucky Derby was in 1913 with Dunrail, who won it at 91-1.
Do you remember that one, Mark?
Dunrail.
He was there, I think.
Who was not intimately familiar with, thank you, Sarah, with Good Horse Dunrail. I had some chick tell me today at the bank when she saw my driver's license, just was opening an account, and she saw it was 65, and she said, you don't look a day over 64, 63.
Thanks, lady.
Thank you.
Did you leave her a tip? The only person who tipped at the bank today was you after you did that.
Thanks so much, teller girl.
Yeah, right?
Go cash my check, lady.
Yeah.
But you were in West Virginia. I don't know how that even translates.
I'm not sure either. But big congratulations to both the winner of the Oaks and the Derby. Like I said, we'll get more into Rich Strike and his story a little bit on in the show.
Let's say Oaks real quick. Slap in the face, like I said before, to Secret Oath. That was weird. A high line. that was made. And quick question for Mark. Mark, do you believe that line was okay? You make lines. Do you believe that line was okay at 6-1 with Secret Oath, morning line, right? 6-1 it was. 6-1. Do you believe that was a good line? Because I don't.
Let me start at the beginning. I caught Secret Oath's action. Some of those imposing wins at Oaklawn Park in admittedly inferior stakes competition. But you could see she was a monster. She was literally willing to run right over horses in front of her at any point the rider so desired. You could see she's super special, okay? And when she ran against the boys, Arkansas Derby it was, she's cut down at the start. She is way further out of it than was necessary. Makes this wide sweeping monster move.
Mid move,
no one in the world, a top-class male could sustain that move after that eventful trip. I thought she ran incredibly well. She lost no luster with me, and I'm not going to pass post, but it was very much my plan to duck on down to simulcast. I don't know, maybe bet 60, 80 to win, something like that, on Secret Oath. I could not make the scene. I got there a little bit late after the race.
Oh, no.
And when I saw that she paid 1080, I was aghast.
Yeah.
And I was like astonished.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And it's just there in 6-1 morning line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so obviously, Mark, and we're not going to bash Mike Battaglia. No one wants to bash. I know you with your morning lines.
I'm not going to knock a fellow morning lines.
No, of course.
And he's done a ton of very accurate.
But you were shocked by the line.
And I have much respect for him. But I will say this. I can only talk from a player's perspective. And I was well familiar with Secret Oath going in. And you guys know I speak only the truth. I did plan to bet on her. And these days for me, with the house construction plan looming and picking my pocket on a daily basis, 60 or 80 bucks is a different wager for me.
Sure. Okay?
And I was astonished that she paid almost 9-2. I mean, I was in disbelief.
Yeah, I thought she would be the favorite alongside Echo Zulu. I thought that was a weird line, and I'm not even gonna, and it's ironic that we're talking about, I barely talk about lines, and you know, we talked about that last time as a big thing. I barely do, but that was shocking.
Well,
that
forget the line, how does the public let her go off at almost 9-2?
Yeah, that's, I thought she'd be 2-1. I thought she'd be 2-1. AJ picked her, I picked Kathleen O, because I thought Kathleen O would be an overlay, and I thought it'd be a price, I was guessing that. But I said Secret Oath, the slap in the face, the 6-1.
I think the notion was her mystique had been shattered. It evaporated against the boys. In fact, it raised my opinion.
How about this prediction right now, guys? How about this? I'm going to throw this out there for everybody out there. Here's my prediction. Secret Oath goes to the Preakness, maybe, right? Favorite.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I would think Epicenter is going to be the choice.
Epicenter, you're probably right. You're absolutely probably right. But what, not morning line, Mark, what they bet.
Post time.
I would say Epicenter would be the favorite. The post time.
You still think so?
Yeah.
But I agree that Epicenter should be, but girl.
Well, you know what? I would normally say we got to see the field makeup. We're going to have to see maybe the pace look. Because it's fairly sophisticated, even in a name race like that, about those nuances. Except Epicenter's so versatile. I think he's kind of a push button horse, and I think Messier too.
But Messier's not in there. So never.
No.
Every time there's a meltdown in a Derby, it seems like the Preakness gets wired because the jockeys overadjust, overadapt, and some of the speeds fall by the wayside. They get jettisoned, thrown overboard. They don't run in the second leg. I don't know if that's going to transpire here or not. But it's almost a pattern.
That's interesting. But there you go, right there. I think, you know, I don't know. They let Rachel Alexandra that year get, overlay, I believe was an overlay, wasn't it? Or wasn't bet as much as I thought she would be. So we'll see. We'll see.
You know what's funny? When the Mind That Bird connections wanted to duck her in the Haskell, that was the first clue I got that he might be available to us. A once-in-a-lifetime thing when we got a Kentucky Derby winner and our West Virginia Derby, and they were straight up scared of Rachel Alexandra. And you know what? The connection for me is that Mind That Bird, Rich Freck's been likened to Mind That Bird. Although I think they're very different creatures, and I think their wins came about in very different ways for very different reasons.
Oh, yeah.
But there is some similarity there, you know. One could be.
Yeah.
Because of the rail trip, because of the late running winds, because of the shockers on the tote board.
Absolutely. And I'm like I always say with this show, I always reserve the right to change my mind all the time. So I just threw that out there off a limb. I thought of it. Yep. And you know what? Might be true. We'll see.
One difference would be the team mind that Bert consisted of. I don't think I'm talking out of school at this point because it's going to be in my memoirs along with some juicy behind the scenes anecdotes. But to recruit and keep mind that Bird was quite a process, and there were some flakes involved on team mind that Bird. But Eric Reed is a stone cold pro, so you can there start you with in, you can start with the difference in connections between those two camps, the mind that Bird.
I'm sure.
And well, we're going to get into that in a minute. Let's go.
Yeah, but real quickly, let's talk about the pregens. Let's talk about who's in, who's out, and who's on the bubble. Let's first talk about who is out. Messier, Taba officially out. Barbaro, Tis the Bomb, Crown Pride, White Abario, and Summer is Tomorrow. Those have confirmed that they are skipping.
They in due time. In due time is not in either.
That's I know right. That.
Yeah, I talked to their team with Edge, and they're not in. I don't know why. I'll let everybody know when I find out, when they probably release it. But in due time is not who is supposed to be there. Is not in it as well.
And your horses that are on the bubble right now, we have Mo Donegal, Tawny Port, Zozo, Secret Oath, Smile, Happy, Charge It, Cyber Knife, Pioneer, Medina, Epicenter, and Zandon. And those horses who are confirmed so far to run in the Preakness are Rich Strike, Simplification, Happy Jack, Early Voting, Unoho, and Skippy Longstocking.
Well, you know, when you take a horse that ran pretty doggone well in the Derby on the Epicenter ilk, and if they're expressing any doubt at this point, it makes me wonder just a little bit, and I'm not going to train the horse for them, and I certainly don't want to imply anything negative. It makes me wonder a little bit how the horse came out of the race.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
It's a long race for them.
The first folks to sign on for the next leg.
It's a mile and a quarter coming back in 2 weeks. You don't do that when you run normally at Santa Anita. You know what I mean? For an allowance race.
It's a quick turnaround.
Now and here. It's a quick turnaround. Anywhere and at a mile and a quarter at 3 years old. That's
mile 3/16, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of horses can't do that.
Yeah.
You know what? Exceptional horses have infirmities and issues just like cheap horses do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, listen, we're sitting on my boy can't even get in there right now because they don't even know if it was a piece of hay stuck in his throat that infected him, and that's Forbidden Kingdom, who I think could walk him into this race if he was healthy and be the favorite tomorrow. You know, he's still sitting in the barn waiting. I mean, they're horses. You're absolutely right. Anything little thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're animals. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's recap the races. There's about 7 races. So we'll go through them real quick. So we can get into some more deeper discussions about the Kentucky Derby. But of course, we're going to obviously start with the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, where Secret Oath took the win over Nest and Desert Dawn.
Turning into the stretch, Echo Zulu's digging down deep on the lead, but Secret Oath has rocketed by. It's Secret Oath in front, opening up, but Echo Zulu's gonna fight on toward the rail. Nest is coming, Desert Dawn is there, final 16th. Secret Oath wanders over to the rail, she's clear by 2. Nest a final try, but Wayne can still train. Secret Oath wins the Kentucky Oaks. Nest would
he waited for that Wayne can still train thing the whole time. No, he wrote that down.
Yes, he sure did.
But yeah, that was good. You saw, like Mark said, looks like that horse can run. She can run through things like a wall.
Yeah,
it was an ultra impressive performance. You know what I wondered when I watched it, the replay for the first time, because I couldn't make the race, unforeseen circumstances. I wondered when I watched the replay why she was so far out of it at the first call, because I think she's a lot faster there. And her middle move was like very imposing, but it was 22-2. I just noticed. So it was a pretty well timed ride. She's got this monstrous interior move when she's called upon. You know what? And I don't base this on the Arkansas Derby, because the way she's cut down at the start and as wide as she made her move there. And that was kind of a quirky race anyways, with some fast segments and some not so fast segments. But just from watching it, and I know she was doomed to hang there, there's no knock on her, just the way the race played out and her trip transpired, I think if she's beatable to fillies, I think it is probably in the end game. I'm not so sure that the final segment is her strongest segment.
Interesting.
I think they get there, kind of.
If he doesn't have it wrapped up and doesn't loom a winner, maybe by the time they hit about the 316th pole, certainly the furlong marker, I think she's probably going to be vulnerable in the races.
All right. There you go. Will be that's interesting, right? Because then now, do you think she's going to go over to the Preakness?
Yeah, Wayne Lucas likes to take a shot, and he enjoys the spotlight, and rightfully so, deservedly so. There's nobody that knows Wayne Lucas behind the scenes that does not wish him well and wish him the best. You know, of all prominent trainers, of all iconic trainers, Lucas is probably the easiest to deal with, the most down to earth, the most personable. And I can tell you that firsthand, because I've had a lot of conversations with Wayne Lucas. And nobody you talk to that's ever encountered him away from the cameras has come away with any kind of a different impression. It's just
an old quarter horse trainer.
You know, an old quarter horse jockey was Bob Baffert.
Sure.
But, you know, it's funny. We always talk about this, Mark. And real quick, we'll get back to it in a second. But
I mean, does Lucas think right now he can beat Rich Strike? You betcha he does.
Sure he does. I mean,
yeah,
allowance horses, I could think they can beat that horse.
Sure.
Even though I'm not taking anything away from
him. I mean, truthfully or not, whether they can or not, it's not the issue we're talking about right now.
Yeah. They got a lot of confidence to do it right now. But remember before when D-Wayne was like the bad guy when he was Baffert? Do you remember that back in the day?
That was quite a misconception back in the day.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know what? And you know what, without taking, even dipping a toe into all the Baffert issues, because I would have to disqualify myself on that, because I am friends with Baffert behind the scenes. Okay. Mm-hmm. There was a widely held perception when Baffert first rose to great prominence that he was Luke Skywalker to Wayne Lucas's somehow sinister Darth Vader.
Yes,
as far
right.
And you know what, as far as Lucas goes, that perception could not have been more misconceived.
Mm-hmm.
Totally
because
wrong.
He always used to win.
Totally false.
That's
everybody hates a winner. It's like being the Yankees, even though I'm not a Yankee fan. I understand it. Everybody's gonna hate you. He's a confident guy. We've dealt with Baffert as well. He's always been very nice to us. He's always been a good guy. We don't know Dean Wayne. We've never met Dean Wayne before, but Baffert's Baffert's always been cool. I talked to him when Country Grammar won that day, a few weeks before everything happened, and just sat there and talked to him for a little while. He's always been a nice guy to us, so I'm not going to say anything. Sorry, everybody.
I don't want to address any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I do deal with him behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Pretending to our West Virginia Derby. I've always found him just a really great guy and extremely professional. As far as Lucas goes, I think that maybe people thought at one time he exuded a certain smugness or arrogance. And if you know the guy, if you've ever dealt with him, that's just so wrong. It's just
I can kind of tell that. Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know him, but I could tell because of how we treat Baffert and how we treat other. I just, you know, it's the trend. And if the trend's that way, I look back because I was young when he was, you know, really big in training and he was like the rock star. And now I look back and I go, oh, my God, he was probably like the cool guy. But then he was the guy in the black hat.
He was the guy back in the 80s who had the $100 haircut. He had the boots. He had and everybody. Everybody hated him. But he was just doing his thing, and now he's a grandfatherly old man, and everybody loves him.
He was a triple clown, you know, the prettiest mother effers in the bunch, you know, and like who we are.
The sunglasses, you know, Margaret, everybody, nobody liked. He wears
shirts that say "You're welcome." Like we're cocky. Yeah. It's what it is. Mark, do you want a "You're welcome" shirt? By the way, I think you need one.
Does that come in 6X?
First of all, I don't believe you're 6X. Actually, you look like you lost weight. Well, let's move on to the next race. You look like you lost weight.
Working on a world record show here. We haven't even gotten to the Derby yet. We're half an hour in.
Oh, no, we're all right. We're 24 minutes. This is like your off the rails show when AJ starts picking horses.
That is true. We'll go through the next races real quick. There's not much to be said as we will be showing the replays. And then we'll save it all To talk more in depth about the race when we start to recap the Derby. But let's go to Saturday's card. We're going to do the pick six that started in race seven, and that is the Pat Day Mile, where Jack Christopher continued to streak to win and won over Papa Cap and My Prankster.
Back into fourth. The rest have a lot to do. They're off the turn. They're into the stretch. Papa Cap is tough. Jack Christopher is right alongside. They're shoulder to shoulder with one furlong to go. My Prankster third trying to close in. But right at the eighth pole, Jack Christopher is set down for the drive. And he responds and opens up. Opens up by two. Papa Cap gives way. My Prankster. And then it's O Captain. But Jack Christopher streaking under the wire. The three-length winner in the end.
No Jack doubt. Christopher is the best three-year-old in the country, bar none. For, you know, if you want to give an award, I will tell Chip that with HRN when we're here. But I have to say, does he remind you of Jackie's Warrior at this point? Are we looking at last year, Jackie Warrior? Because we'll get into that as well. Impressive thing. What do you guys think?
Agree. You took the words that right out of my mouth, best three-year-old out there. That was no doubt. My only regret was I did not unload even more on Jack Christopher. We called it the other day that it was going to, some money's fill, what money's worse that won. And really wish I unloaded. I mean, it didn't pay much, but just a beautiful horse.
Very much.
Yeah, it was impressive. It was super impressive. You know, I was only watching most of the undercard out of the corner of my eye because I was at my downstairs dungeon desk. And I was doing dungeon duty. His mom was assistant race secretary, and I was prepping for the show at the same time.
very impressive. Let's go to the next one.
Yep, race eight was the Derby City Distaff, where Obligatory took the win over four graces in just one time.
The quarter pole. Just one time by the quarter pole in front by two. Edgeway set down for the drive. Four Graces is as well. Those the ones under pressure. Racing for the mid-stretch marker. Just one time. Still there. Still there by two. Four Graces coming on strongly. Bell's the one. And Obligatory, who was last by the quarter pole, is flying down the center of Churchill Downs. Four Graces short lead. Obligatory up in time.
What a ride. What a ride.
The whole time.
And crazy, huh?
Yeah. That was pretty impressive.
Yes,
it tells you the track was uniform. The red strike didn't have any kind of a bias or pro rail thing in his favor. It was a wide sweeping late runner to win. It went impressive.
Yes, sweeping towards the inside, too. It was weird. It was, he went in and seemed like the rail was, well, the inside was pretty there.
Yeah.
Well, that horse came around him there too, you know, when he came a big late burst, you know. So it would be difficult to attribute Rich Strike's upset to any kind of a pro rail thing, you know.
Great.
Exactly. Well, let's go to race nine, which was the American Turf Stakes, where Stolen Base took the win over Bally Cove and Psyduck.
Turn off the turn into the stretch. Red Danger comes away with a narrow lead. Stolen Base to the attack. Balnikov is there in Portfolio Company with Clear Sailing up the rail. Smoke and Tea late on the scene with Side Dog down to the final 16th. Balnikov's short lead. Stolen Base is going to fight to the finish. Stolen Base re-rallies. Stolen Base turns back Balnikov to win.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't know if that was a misstep. The horse hung. I don't know. That looked weird. Didn't it, Mark? The horse on the outside there?
You know what? There were some formful results, as far as I could tell, from some of the turf races. But it had to be so spongy out there that I take a lot of those efforts with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Both good and bad, you know?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. All right. Race 10, we had the Churchill Downs Stakes, where we got to see Jackie's Warrior win over Reinvestment Risk and Aloha West.
Jackie's Warrior comes wide off the turn. Massive opening at the rail for the Breeders' Cup winner, Aloha West. Reinvestment Risk in behind that one. Down to the final furlong, and Jackie's Warrior, with plenty left for the stretch drive, has kicked back clear by five.
He loves.
Reinvestment Risk, Aloha West. Everybody chasing Jackie's Warrior, and a perfect ride from Joel Rosario. Slow early, fast late.
Jackie's Warrior is Jack Christopher of last year, like kind of the next year,
it's
right?
Good analogy.
So if they race against each other, should we call the jack off? Nobody.
Oh my goodness, sure.
Remember when you hear that, You're not going to hear that anywhere.
In the Pittsburgh area, that's called Jagoff with a G. It doesn't mean what you think it does. It's a derogatory term about a person who's a total jerk. There's nothing sexual about it in the greater Pittsburgh area, and Monitor is part of the greater Pittsburgh area. It's Steeler country, baby. When somebody says, that dude's a jagoff. There is no sexual inference at all.
Oh, my goodness.
It just means complete jerk.
It's like douchebag. Doesn't really.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Right, but no, anyway, Jackie's War, super impressive. Jackie's War, he's just better and better all the time. I mean, if you draw a line through that Breeders' Cup where he was hurt, I guess, came back and beat Aloha West. I mean, he's just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So I was disappointed in Aloha West there. I fell in love with Aloha West, and then the Breeders' Cup, boom. And this race was disappointing, I thought.
You know what? I don't think it was a fair matchup between those two horses, though, Tom. And I'll tell you why. I didn't handicap that. And I watched it pretty closely because I was home and I was at my leisure lounging on my bed and having this huge Jethro Bodine-sized crock of Honey Bunches of Oats. This is my costume in the afternoons, you know? So I'm watching a race, and Jackie's War gets in front so easily. And Aloha West had to be gunned in a futile attempt to do his own dirty work. He's not a horse who's equipped to go out there and pressure the pace. He hadn't even run since his Breeders' Cup sprint.
Since the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
So there is no way in the world that he's any threat whatsoever to Jackie's Warrior there. That was a free lunch for Jackie's Warrior because, as the announcer, I think, said rather aptly, slow early and fast late, and that would be my assessment of the race, too. And you know what? That's a case, too, when it comes down to exact the psychology, where the second-best horse in the race can lose second by virtue of being forced to chase the best, in other words, fastest horse in the race. Because if they don't have to gun Aloha West like that through the early stages, because they're riding a one, they want to stay well in touch with Jackie's Warrior, and he's going to be second because he's clearly the second best horse in the race.
And that's your soundbite right there. That is your soundbite right there, Mark. That's some knowledge.
Yep. Perfect. All right, well, let's talk about the Turf Classic real quick before we go on to the Derby. And we're the Turf Classic. Santon took the win over Mere Mission and Adamo.
Shirl Sprite's going to stick to the inside route, followed by Public Sector. Off the turn into the stretch, Tribhuvan still the one to catch. They're closing in quickly, though. Mira Mission coming fast down the center of the turf. Santon goes with that one. Then it's Shirl Sprite. Adamo's back and forth, one furlong to go. Mira Mission digging down deep. Santon trying to get by once again. Santon's re-rallying. Mira Mission responds right back. It's going to be close. Here's the wire. Santon got it.
Same thing, Mark. When you said that soggy track, looking at it again, it was kind of weird. Like the horses on the outside again looked like, I mean, you don't see horses re-rally a couple times in a row on that turf. And that's weird because it looked like maybe, I don't know, it's a misstep or something like that. But it did look kind of weird again, didn't it?
That's the first time I've seen even a snippet of that race. And my simple observation would be the winner was really game. You can see how he pinned his ears back. He did not want to lose. He took the other horse's threat very personally. And the second finisher, I think, was trying to log in. I'd like to see the
log in.
He might have been trying to get in a little bit, and that may have cost the place horse just a little bit of momentum. I'd have to see that on.
Tyler Gaff on the turf.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. On the turf. There's no doubt. You know, that's interesting because, when you see those horses, like, what do we call it? Like, I don't hear this term much anymore, Mark. You know this. That's when they call it the actual class. The class, when the horse has class, it's when the horse comes back. Most people don't.
Oh, yeah, that's old school. That.
You're going back to the old Kelco class calculator days.
Yeah. It's like now it's like, what's class? Oh, it's what grade it is and whatever. And back in the day, it was class is like a horse runs up on you and you want to run.
The right dominant system of the week, man. You're going way back to the old.
Yeah, man, we're old, Mark. We're old, man. Come on, this is what
you
we
told us the horse with the watch in there and stuff. You know what? I'm like 6 years old, and I know, man, this dude's so far off on this stuff. You know.
Exactly. Sarah has no clue what we're talking about.
Idiocy, I tell you. I'm 6 years
old. But race 12 was
not that big of a story.
No, it wasn't this big story. There we go. Really not an interesting one either. But I am going to show the overhead, which I know we've all seen, but it just tells the biggest story of how this race unfolded, especially come to this stretch. But
don't you hate the way they keep cutting away for the ridiculous camera angles there, and you become disoriented?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And then
that's what we can talk about, too.
And they cut away at the worst time. I swear to God, any other time besides that, like, backstretch move, and then they jump it, would be the worst time.
I think Rich Strike did a lot of his advancing during the camera cutaways.
The camera angle on the backstretch, where the level that they had it on, was ridiculous. Because you missed most of the backstretch, because it'd be like horses. Oh, now there's a building. And there's the horse. Oh, there's another building.
And it kept changing angles. I think every time, it's kind of like between calls, during the camera flip, I think Rich Strike picked up like 5 lengths every time they flipped the camera.
Yeah, it's so weird. Anyway, let's go down to We'll talk about that in a minute.
Let's show this real quick, and we'll get on with it.
Coming up on the outside, Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my
First off, I have to say, great call, because remember when Mind the Bird came up the rail and he missed the call? Dave Johnson missed the call. He got that one.
That was Travis Stone.
Travis
Stone's a great caller.
Was that? No, that was Larry.
That was Larry.
Yeah. Okay, Colmus is a total pro, too, and to his credit, he did catch it. These guys are both good.
No, absolutely.
They're both exceptional.
Yeah.
I'm not used to hearing Colmus in straight on excitable mode like that, which was appropriate.
The big knock on him, is always he's very boring.
Monotone, right.
That was a great call. Fantastic.
Yep.
It was a great call. He caught it. And you know what? You're looking at it, it says it's not Mind That Bird from the overhead. Sorry, it's not. But
it does still have the awesome ride traffic crazy. It's watching someone on the highway.
You wonder if Rosario, you know how it is, Mark, especially in time, you know as well. When you're watching these horses and when they get engaged with another horse, we know they're animals. Epicenter's here with the horse on the outside of him, they're dueling. Meanwhile, the guy's coming over here that you don't know what's gonna beat you, and he did. Not saying Epicenter would have won or anything like that, but he was engaged on the outside.
Right.
I believe they said it. Rosario made the right move at the right time. We'll get into it in a second. So let's talk about it. Rich Strike, $30,000, I believe, maiden claiming race only win. What do we think about this? Before we get into the trainer and the jockey that you know, Mark, personally, what do we think about this? Is this, well, first I'm going to ask, is this good for racing? Or is this make everybody mad? Because we'll talk about a little story with that too. Does this make everybody mad, like anybody can win? Or is this good for racing? Not story-wise, is it good for racing that a horse that shouldn't have been in the race, let's just say shouldn't, if everybody went into a point system wise.
I think it's a great Cinderella story. And I think the aftermath of the race and all the activity on social media and all the press coverage have really bolstered horse racing. It's given us a shot in the arm. We need it very badly. And the public perception of something is never predictable until after the fact. And it's been 1,000% positive when it comes to Rich Strike's upset. I mean, a lot of players that lost some serious money on the race, some serious gamblers, they're still happy, still elated, still over the moon to watch that. Mm-hmm.
And what's great about it is it's anybody can win. It's an ownership group. It's a small. It's not It's not an oil baron or the rich kids who had a couple horses last year.
No, playing for $30,000.
It is my derby. Almost normal people win this, and you saw them. You saw them in the background afterwards, and it was just. This, how could you not like it? I mean,
you imagine, like, we've not been on that level. obviously, of a horse, but we are horses we've been very close to in big races. Not this big, but in big races. That wins at those kind of odds. Like, we had a horse we really, really cared about a lot. That was 6-1 in the Pat Day Mile. We knew him personally. We were part owners of him. And he was 6-1. You know what I mean? He was 6-1. And he had the lead and got beat. And we were going crazy. I can't imagine, like, the feeling of being, like, the 99-1 shot, because that's what he was, morning line or whatever. Or the, you know, early thing, 80-1, whatever went off of. Of, you know, you're just like, hey, it's cool, we're in the Derby. You have that dream. You have that, you know, making that half-court shot to win the NBA Finals.
And any jockey, it doesn't have to be Johnny V or Joel Rosario.
So
any jockey from any track, any trainer from any track, around anywhere. And that's that. It's,
and then they win.
So good.
And you know, we've all had our highlights. We've all experienced jubilation. But I got to tell you, we will never once in our lives, for one nanosecond, experience, feel, or be able to really relate to what Sonny Leone and Eric Reed must have felt in the closing strides there.
Oh, I want to go. I want Sonny to come on, and we're going to throw this out there right now. Sonny, come on our show, and we'll throw this to you. And I'm sure you'll see it, because we're going to put some stuff in there. Well, maybe. You might be busy now. But I want to know, coming down the stretch, and
he's going to have the time, and that's a whole other topic we'll get into.
Like you said, Mark, you know, we've all been there, not there, but in places where you're just like, holy shit, I can win. And like, all of a sudden he's going through and he came up on the rail and went, I have horse.
You heard what Leon said.
I'm going
to
win.
You know what? His personal sense of wonderment, I think, had to culminate at the same time in a race that provoked his post-race remark when he said, at about 70 yards out, I'm thinking, I got this race. Exactly. I got this race.
Yeah.
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 Like, I got it.
But I can't even imagine what they felt like.
It's, yeah. I mean, in a small level, it's like, you know, obviously not the Derby comparing to anything. You know, if you've been through any sport where you're just like, you know, when you hit a golf ball and you're like, oh, shit, if that's the right stick, I'm within 2 inches of the hole.
I don't think 65 miles, my joyometer still goes that high to register like what Sonny Leone and Eric Reed must have.
Oh, no, it doesn't go to there. No, there.
It doesn't go that high.
No. But it's, I was going to say, times those feelings by 100. You know, when you know you played football at a small level or whatever you did, and you hit the corner and you think, oh my God, I'm going to break this. You know, that feeling times it by 1,000. And that's what they felt, I'm sure.
How many people do you think are to be claiming newly turned 3-year-olds and 2-year-olds near the turn of the year next season? This is going to spark all kinds of activity at the claim box because they showed it can be done.
That's right.
You can shop wisely.
Good point.
You can find the right horse, and you can hit it rich.
Yeah. Actually, a friend of mine who's an owner messaged me Sunday saying, we need to do a show about claimers. She's like, when I researched more and more of the Derby Pass, and especially Rich Strike, she's like, there's something there that people don't see and don't know as owners and claimers. And you're right, Mark. I think we're going to.
We have a couple friends who are claimers, who are owners. That could be an interesting show.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. Especially when you go out to the big.
You know, that's the undersold part of the story.
Yeah.
Because people are so enthralled with the ride, as well they should be. And we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. And also with Eric Reed. With a guy from his level of racing that he has competed at to win the big one, that I think short shrift is given to what an inspired claim that was. And what a great job it was to do that for Eric Reed with the claimer. With the result of $1,000.
Absolutely, Mark. So let's get into that right away with that. We can talk about it all day, how insane that ride was. And
you want to talk about Leone or Eric Reed first?
Let's talk about... You know these guys.
Yeah.
You're close with them.
Well, now Leone is a guy I've never talked to, but I will tell you this. I know a lot of him, and I have watched him on a daily basis for several years now. Okay, now Eric Reed is a guy I've talked to a few times on the phone, but he is a guy that runs a lot of horses at Mountaineer, and I am very familiar with his methods, very familiar with his kind of wisdom, and probably fairly well acquainted with how he handles a horse and how he spots a horse. So which guy do you want to discuss first?
Let's go with the jockey first. Let's go with the jockey because we know all about him because your big tracks that you love, he's a big jockey at. Correct?
You know what? You know what the cool part about it is? And I think some other really serious players who focus on Mahoney in the wintertime, and they do exist. I'm not the only one. I think they could finally say out loud what would have been almost taboo to say before the race. And I can say it straight up now. And I have said it behind the scenes to my cronies, to fans of the simulcast show, and to other officials that work in Mahoney and work in Cleveland. I've said it to jocks agents. I've said it to riders. But now I can say it in public without being tarred, feathered, and ridiculed. Sonny Leone, and I want to say this very clearly, is one of the best race riders on the planet. Period. Period. And you know what? You can say that now without being shunned from polite society and ridiculed and told to wear some kind of a dunce cap. Yeah, I said it, and I'm going to say it again. The guy rides on the Ohio circuit at Mahoney and at Thistledown, and he moonlights at Turfway Park, and he is one of the best riders, not just in America, but in the world. When you play Mahoney, then you understand that a pace meltdown with Sonny Leone's extreme brand of patience, his singular brand of patience, okay, and a 20-horse field to weave through, to where some steering is required, to where the court vision of a point guard, of a Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas is required. Dude, that's like ringing the dinner bell for or raising the bat signal for Sonny Leone. Because I've watched this stuff on a daily basis in Mahoney, as of a lot of other astute players, for a long time. And Leone is uncanny at his ability to get a horse to relax. The only guy that I could even liken to Leone would be the great, the iconic, the legendary Dave Gull. When it comes to smaller circuits, wow, Leone is the best rider I've seen since Dave Gull. And I have gone on record as saying that with my own two eyes, in person, witnessing their wares. And I've seen Shoemaker, and I've seen Coffin. I've seen a lot of those guys up close ride. And I will contend, Pinkai is the best rider I ever saw with my two eyes. Gull is the second best. And I would liken Leone to Dave Gull, because wow, Leone is incredibly patient. He has an unparalleled knack for getting a horse to relax. I mean, he rides in a bubble, regardless of the horse's running style. Sonny Leone can convince the horse to do his will. I mean, the guy is nothing short of a sorcerer. And riding at Mahoney, which probably enjoyed his best success, has ingrained it into him not to lose ground. Because when you swing wide in Mahoney on the flat turns, you do what I term the Mahoney Mambo, and you drift out another four or five paths, and have to re-rally, and probably in vain. So Sonny Leone developed this almost supernatural knack for saving ground and finding seams from off the pace. Leone has this just incredible ability to see what plays out in front of him or what's playing out behind him. He's got a sixth sense. He knows when to move. He knows when to ask his mount. And I've seen a lot of races where I rode him off, because you've always got one eye on Sonny Leone. I'm not a jockey guy. Jockeys don't play a big part of my handicapping. But anybody who tells you that this win adhered to conventional handicapping wisdom, 10% rider, 90% horse, you can forget about that. I don't know what the percentage was, but Leone has a way in races, and you've always got an eye on him when you're watching, because he's always a threat. No matter how the race develops, no matter what you think of his trip, he's saving something and constantly reassessing. He's coming up with a new plan. He never gives up and quits trying to win a race. And so many times when you write him off at some point in the race, there he is. He somehow materializes at the wire. I mean, he's got the obvious ingredients. Okay, Sonny Leone's got a beautiful seat on a horse, for one thing. He stays down in rhythm in unison with his mount. He's not one of these guys that's a strong finisher, because he stands up and takes the long, tight rein and waits and waits and waits, and the horse has no choice but to mount some kind of a finish. Sonny Leone is down, he's aerodynamic, and he's in good unison with his mount, even when he's saving a lot of horse. Sonny Leone is an almost unparalleled finisher on a horse. He's not a big stick rider, and he throws some crosses, but not a lot of crosses. But if you notice, the old school way that he scrubs on a horse, it's incredible. It is just incredible. As a matter of fact, I get chills down my spine when I watch him shake that horse up. When I watch him finally say, okay, big boy, let's go, and start to scrub. Sonny Leone's the master of that. He's the absolute master. He's got incredible guts. And if you notice one thing, he never oversteered there. Not one time. Altered course only as much as he had to on Rich Strike. It's the Rich Strike Show, and I truly believe it's the best ride I've ever seen in a Kentucky Derby, probably in a Grade One race, because it's almost eerie the way Sonny Leone wrapped, cut over to the inside. He even called a slow start, a slowish start, a good break in the aftermath of the race, because that enabled him to weave his way over and save ground. And he could feel they were going real quick up front before anybody else sensed it, I think, because you can see he had a hole. He had to be, what, 20, 25 lengths out of it?
Sure.
Nearly going, if not more. But he's sitting there. He's casual because he knows the race is a mile and a quarter, and he knows this race is not going to go to the swiftest. That's the Sonny Leone Show. And beyond that, he somehow puts his mount in a bubble, oblivious to the competition, to the horse completely relaxes, regardless of running style. This is true on front runners. It's true on stalkers. And it is true on deep closers, and gets the horse to do his will. Now, it is often said that Leone rides barely within the rules. Okay. And to me, that kind of aggression, okay, that kind of gamesmanship is very laudable. It's a very commendable trait in a race rider. I want to see that they want to win. And if maybe sometimes they ride the other guy's horse just a little tiny bit, I don't mind that too much. In the immortal words of Bedbug Eddie, in the Pope of Greenwich Village, where Mickey Rourke challenged, you got guts, kid. I don't get too mad at that. So I like jockeys who do some race riding. Within the rules, some good old-fashioned race riding, like Sonny Leone. What a lot of fans aren't going to know is if anybody stuck a camera in Sonny Leone's face and a mic and said afterwards, where are you going? If he would have said, I'm going to Disneyland, it would not be by choice, because he's sitting on days now for a Thistledown incident. And he was, I want to make this very clear, because these are the rules in Ohio. He had the freedom to ride one stakes race, even if he had been under days at the time. One stakes race and one stakes race only. But in fact, the stewards, a lot of times, will kind of steer a guy's days around that kind of an engagement. So he's got a shot to ride the race. And he's going to start days up there. I think they may have commenced today, perhaps, or at least tomorrow. He's going to serve a four-day suspension for a very spirited incident between him and a Thistledown rider, in which Leone very clearly comes over. And he wants to ride within the rules, but he wants to let the other guy know that he's there. And the other guy responds by going full head play and broker's tip, the infamous Kentucky Derby, where Don Meaden, who was the other jockey, Herb Fisher? I'm trying to remember. Were they engaged in like full-fledged fisticuffs? And they're whipping each other? Well, the other rider responds to Leone's histrionics by trying to shove him off the horse. Pull it up and whistle down.
Wow.
He's trying to push Sonny Leone off the horse. So this guy gets 30 days. Leone gets 4 days, which I'm sure is just in stewarddom, you know?
Sure. But
Leone is now on days. And if he's going to Disney World, it's not by choice.
Why not?
Yeah, that's why just not? One example of how Leone pushes the envelope and rides very aggressively, which never came into play in this Kentucky Derby, as he worked out a really good trip for his mount. Right. But once again, to me, that kind of stuff is praiseworthy. When I bet on a jockey, I want him to want to win. I want victory. The safety of the other riders has to come first. But after that, I want victory to be his first priority.
You want the tryhard guy. I don't want the guy that shakes hands.
I don't want to be misconceived here. I want somebody to say, well, Mark Patterson just said Sonny Leone's a dirty rider. I'm not saying that at all.
Nope.
I'm saying Leone is well known for his burning desire to win, which sometimes sees him pushing the envelope a little bit while staying within the rules.
It's like Irad. Irad does the same thing.
Yeah.
What did you guys think?
Gary Stevens, Garrett Gomez used to do it. I mean,
sure.
I mean,
Aaron, your boy Aaron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of the ride?
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, absolutely. So, before we get on to the trainer, let me ask you, Sonny Leone, does he jump ship from that colony and try to go somewhere else now that he's a new stardom? What do you think?
If he does not have, this guy's not a one-hit wonder. That was not a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect ride, the incredible ride that he put on Rich Strike. There's more where that came from. And if Sonny Leone gets more mounts in Grade One races, you're going to see more of that stuff. Trust me. And if some prominent agents right now aren't ringing his phone off the freaking hook, I don't know what they're looking at. I would suggest they pull up some Mahoney video too, to see that this was not a one-and-out deal. This was not a one-and-done deal for Sonny Leone. I've seen that kind of stuff from him for years.
There you go.
I don't wish anything bad on his agent. I don't even know who the guy's agent is.
Yeah, he's been with the same agent for a little while now. I think he's Australian. I forget the man's name, but
you know what? I think it's Jeff Perrin. It might be Jeff Perrin.
Jeff's been in the game forever, right?
And you know what? If it is Jeff Perrin, good on him. Jeff is a very sharp guy and an incredibly good agent.
Yeah.
Who kind of kept me apprised of what was going on behind the scenes there and Eric Reed's chances of pulling into the race. But he is a more than competent agent. But he's a very sharp guy. But if he's not feeling just a little bit of trepidation and worried about some footsteps behind his back and Sonny Leone getting rung up on the phone by some prominent agents in major venues, then I would be surprised.
So let's go on with Eric Reed here. Let's talk about that. You know, somebody you've talked to, you've said you talked to him, and somebody you know well in the
industry. Well, you know what? We're not personal friends on Let's Go Have a Beer.
No, but you know of him well.
But you know what? I know a lot about his methods and how he rolls. Eric Reed's a guy who does his business mainly through agents, but they do his bidding. They don't have the latitude to do as they will, because he's a guy that goes in with a very firm game plan and a very solid set of instructions, what they are to do and when they are to do it. You know, just real quickly, before my show started, I was going to go to the Mac machine because I didn't have any cash in my pocket. What else is there? And I was going to bet maybe $100 on the Chad Brown horse because I did think the pace might fall apart. I thought it would certainly be hot, and I thought it was a logical closer. Okay, the Mac machine breaks down, much to my consternation, like 2 users ahead of me, so I can't get down on the race. At that point, there's nothing I'm going to do besides root for Eric Reed, because Eric Reed has been such a boon to our racing program for so many years. I mean, he's one of the titans of Mountaineer over the years. Because sure, you can take a Kevin Patterson, whose win percentage, whose miracles, whose strike rate is probably unparalleled in street thoroughbred racing, and then you can take a guy like Eddie Clouston, and certainly a guy like Jay Bernardini, who have been such superior assets to our program with their volume, their horsemanship, and their constant acquisitions of different kinds of horses that flavor and add diversity to our racing program. But Eric Reed, in his own right, has made a very unique contribution to our racing program, because Eric Reed certainly has a talent as a trainer, and the stock as well, to be more than competitive at some much bigger tracks. But he does choose to run a whole lot at Mountaineer. Okay, so we're grateful for that. So we're all rooting for this guy in the Kentucky Derby. When he wins it, we are absolutely over the moon. But one thing that just kind of tickled me when I heard people say he is there just for the experience. And I'm sure the experience is a big part of it for a lot of horsemen. But you know what? It was a big mistake to think going in that Eric Reed is just there to participate in the big day, to get a box, to put a suit and tie on. Because Eric Reed never, ever waste his time, his owner's time, or one of his horse's energy. You can trust me on that. And something else, he was extremely eager behind the scenes to get that horse in. And Jeff Perrin kind of kept me up to date a little bit on what was going on and the chances that he might pull in and what Wayne Lucas's intentions might be as far as scratching the horse that gave Rich Strike that epic opportunity. Okay? But I could have told people even then, and I did not like Rich Strike to win it. I'm not going to pass post, okay? Now, after the fact, I think it's more explainable than people might think. That doesn't mean it was predictable. Explainable and predictable are two very different things. Okay? Yes. But I know that Eric Reed was really on edge to get the horse in. And if you know how Eric Reed rolls, then you know that it wasn't just so he could be there and have the whole Derby experience. And it's generally true behind the scenes, too. And far lesser races, obviously, than the Kentucky Derby. But anytime a trainer's only also eligible and really wants to get in or makes an entry in an overfilled race in the morning and calls you repeatedly, how many are in there? Are you overfilled now? What's the preference date on my horse? Kind of a behind-the-scenes racing office drum on how much shot a horse has to draw into an oversubscribed race.
Right.
Anytime they're really eager and they're chomping at the bit, it always means they're dying to run because the horse is on tilt.
Right.
And somewhere in the back of my mind, out of respect for Eric Reed, and my knowledge of how trainers behave and how they roll and how they think, and how anxious they are to get horses in that are kicking the barn down and really ready for breakout performance. It should have tweaked something more than it did in the back of my mind. And maybe I would have bet 10 or 20 bucks, which I did not, which I did not. The surface switch thing, that is so classic Eric Reed. He's so far ahead of the game when it comes to the three-headed monster. Turf, conventional dirt, or synthetics. Eric Reed puts them through their aptitude tests and discerns very quickly what a horse wants to do. And at that point, he is impeccable in his placements where he spots horses. Not just when it comes to the class level that he enters them at, but also what footing a horse wants. Because Eric Reed's very savvy. He's put them through their paces. And I think if anybody has it solved, the surface switch thing, back and forth, synthetics, dirt, turf and dirt. He runs a lot on grass as well. Turf to synthetics. I think Eric Reed could probably lecture on that topic very knowingly. And those would be some of the questions I would ask him if we got a chance to interview him. You know, the old wives' tale, the old thing, how horses get a boost and have some kind of an edge in fitness when they flip from all-weather footing over to conventional dirt. I don't know. I've seen it in play a few times. But I think it probably ran a little bit deeper with Eric Reed. He's not throwing spaghetti against the wall when he makes a major surface switch like that with a horse who acquired all of his Derby points on all-weather footing, but then goes for the money on dirt. Trust me, that's not an accident because Reed knows not only where to spot his horses, but they have some kind of a shot. Because once again, he never wastes one of his horses' energy for his own time, but also he is uncanny at knowing when to switch footings and which horse to do it with.
That's very great. Interesting. And to Eric Reed out there, once again, when you come on our show, and Mark will be on too, we're going to ask you those questions.
Ask him some of those questions because I guarantee you.
No, you're going to ask him, Mark, because we're going to bring you on.
He can impart a lot of wisdom on those topics, I'm sure.
All right, so that's our
journey. You know what's cool about him in my mind? I know I'm going on and on, but Eric Reed, his contribution to our racing program was unique because he's a guy who runs good young horses at Mountain Air. Okay, real prospects, horses go on to do something. Often when they're maidens, and a lot of never twos, never threes, and never fours. And those are the kind of races that my boss, Joe LeCatton of McCavish, and I, and Jim Colvin, director of racing as well, that we've always advocated for and stuffed as purse heavy as we possibly could from our available purse distribution. Because not only can you fill those kind of races, the non-life allowance races, because there are a lot more of those kind of horses out there than there are $30,000 claimers, $40,000 claimers. But those horses often, in effect, go through the farm system, which can serve, to populate our future features. They come up through our farm system, the 2 life allowances, the 3 life allowances, the 4 life allowances. They're familiar with Mountaineer. They prove they like the track, and they go on to run open allowance. They compete in some of our stakes and stuff like that, some of our allowance optionals. So we've always tried to stress those kind of races in the condition book and also to put maybe a disproportionate amount of our money into those kind of races. And I think it's been one reason for maybe our disproportionate success. And those are the kind of races that Eric Reed wins when he comes to Mountaineer. And that makes his contribution to our racing program not only very invaluable, but also very unique. He is sort of, when it comes to our racing program, the modern-day Bernie Flynn or Tom Amos. Because they were the forerunners that looked at and looked at the purses and said, you know what, I'm going to go there. This is worth my time. And probably I can outclass the locals, to be completely honest about it. You know?
Yeah,
no, that makes total sense. So
he is a descendant of that same thought line and that same bloodline when it comes to conditioning, Eric Reed. The Bernie Flynn Tom Amos tree.
That's impressive.
As far as which purses he targets in Mountaineer, where he brings the horses from, and what manner in which he does it.
Sure, his method, I guess, when it comes to the races. Yeah, that makes total sense. So we can all agree that this was a great story. And before we get into the Hot Jockey of the Week, I just have to give a little shout out to some people out there. I don't know, the racing douches or whatever. Is it dudes or douches? I'm not sure, that went out there and said, and I'm only saying this because you came at Tommy. So remember when you come at one of our guys, we're going to come at you a little bit too with the clowns, and you came at Tommy, and you fucked up. and you said something really stupid, that this wasn't a good story. You were angry. Maybe you didn't pick them. Guess what? Nobody did. Look at all these stories around. Remember that we are here. We're trying to make this sport better. Don't tell me you're trying to make it better when you do stuff like that. You're not. You're, you know, just own it. Own it. Mark, myself.
Be accountable.
I know Mark and myself, and I'm sure Tom has said some really dumb shit before. And you know what we do? We own it. Don't come back on it and say you were taken out of context with a stupid thing you said. You can't say that, because if it was a stupid thing, they took it as a stupid thing.
Well, you know, Randy, I don't want to antagonize anybody. I do dig me some Tom, though. I will say this. Do you think maybe it was a story of some import when former President Trump calls the trainer and they have what's been conveyed as a long conversation? Do you think maybe that validates the story?
I mean, there's some story there. Absolutely.
Yeah, President Trump
calls the guy?
Yeah, let's say there's a story besides the Donald. We'll leave it at that.
When you're from the Donald, you've done something. Regardless of your politics, you've achieved something.
But hey, it's not a good story. It's not a good story.
Yeah, listen, I'm welcome to many guys. Anytime you guys want to talk, hang out, I don't care. Come see us. We will have you on, please. But don't stop. We have enough shit against us in horse racing. Don't be the little bitches.
Don't be those people.
Yeah, that are just crying.
Yeah.
Don't do it. We have enough bullshit going on.
I thought I was blood on my show. I'm getting blood with this now.
Hey. We like everybody. We just don't like it when
we're not trying to be all whatever. We're just trying to say, like, you know, just own it. All I want you to do is own it. You say, fuck, you said something stupid. Yeah, don't come back and say,
I was taken out of context.
I said something stupid, but it was taken out of context. I don't understand. That means they took what you said stupid as stupid. And that doesn't mean if they took it out of context, they'd be smart. Just don't do it. Just own it. Say, you know, when Tom said, I've never watched their show, don't say, yes, you have, Tommy. Don't do that. Don't do that. Come on.
I actually watched it today, and they gave another half-assed apology.
Yeah, listen, at the end of the day,
I had to turn it in.
Mark Patterson walks into a track, they know who he is. If I walk into a track, they know who I am. Guess who they don't know? You guys. So sorry. I don't care how many views you have. Anyway. I needed AJ here to get me to the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Hey, Sarah.
But Sarah, no. We're going to get into, we're going to do Hot Jack of the Week.
I got to ask you.
It's going to be an easy one, and then we're going to go on to the five questions.
Are you talking on Randy like that's enough, or are you getting a little bit turned on? What's going on
here? My pants have gone up to high waters.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Woo, help me.
No, well, I mean, was she trying to pull you back, or is she a little bit stimulated?
No, she's about to run out to the store in like 3 seconds. She's got to go shopping.
Go to Strawbridge and Clothier, or wherever she gets her
clothes. Yeah, right.
With that said,
keep the glasses, girl. I'll come back.
We do have our Hot Jockey of the Week sponsored by Fantech.com. You can get all your great jockey gear. They also have Triple Clowns gear at www.fantech.com. And who else?
Fan-tack.
www.fan-tack.com.
There you go. We got it.
You got me all making fun of me for saying www. I forgot the dash. Well, they have such great fan gear. They even have Barbara Grove gear. But who else is going to be our Hot Jockey of the Week? He won one race this week, and we talked about it. Probably as even our guest said, one of the best, if not the best, Derby ride of my 40 some odd years lifetime that I've seen. And that is Mr. Sonny Leone. It was just magnificent ride that he did. And we've talked about it. We could not talk about it enough. And you know what? I'm going to give a special shout out to, we are all on social media. I'm going to give a special shout out to their groom, Jerry Dixon Jr. and Jerry Dixon Sr. They were out there, and not enough can be said about those grooms that are with those horses each and every day. They know these horses better than the jockeys, better than the trainers, better, certainly better than the owners, and certainly better than us. And Jerry Dixon Jr. After the race was very special, very heartwarming. So congratulations to all involved, owners, trainers, jockeys, and groom.
Well all said, right, Tommy.
Hot jockey of the week. That makes sense, Sonny Leone. Very good. Let's get right into it, because everybody wants to wait for this one.
Can't wait.
We've been going for a while, but this is going to be fun. This will be easy, too. So, Mark, I'm going to hit you off with five questions. They're all over the map here. We're going to give you five questions with Mark Batterson right now.
I knew about this in advance, but I did not know the questions, right?
You do not know? No, this could be. Okay, so here, no, there's no right or wrong answer.
I can't plead the fifth?
Nope, there's no right or wrong answer here. You're just going to give them, and this is what Mark Patterson thinks about a lot of things, I guess. The first one's going to be, a little would you rather question. Would you rather be stuck, if you were stuck with one job in your whole life, Mark, what would it be if you could choose from the three and this had to be one of your jobs? Porta potty cleaner, roadkill removal specialist, or greyhound trainer?
Well, Randy, I could never follow in your esteemed footsteps. The guy was a greyhound trainer. He actually trained greyhounds. And my first response to that was my first thought, the first time they interviewed me. And I said, "How proud your parents must be, Sarah." How do you even do that?
I know.
You take this dude in front of your parents and say, "This is my man with whom I'm well pleased. He trains greyhounds, Mom and Dad."
I've got to see some of those old programs.
Yeah. Okay. There's a few things you leave out.
Without giving too much away. Okay. And man, this is a topic, and I never, never go there.
Tell me you were a porta potty cleaner.
I am. Man alive, you guys get me to say stuff and discuss things I would not otherwise even go near. Okay, but I am one of my pet peeves is man alive. Please delete this after I say it. But you gave me three options only.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's it. Mr. That's Greyhound. I'm not giving you a choice of what you could do the rest of your
one
life.
One of my pet peeves is unclean restrooms. As a matter of fact, when I go to a restaurant, my son and I, we do the dining tour, you know, because his mom a lot of times at work, she's an RN at a nearby medical center. Pulls long 12-hour stretches, and I encourage that too, by the way. But anyways, more cash. Bring that cash in, baby. But anyway, so my son and I, we go to a lot of different restaurants, and one thing I do, the first thing I do is I check out the restroom. And I'm going to tell you, if it's not military, white glove, spanking clean, we're out of there. We are absolutely out of there. So, yes, indeed, if I had to, I would roll up my sleeves, hold my nose, put some latex gloves on, and make it clean myself.
Porta potty cleaner.
Damn.
Porta potty cleaner. That was shocking.
And you know what? I'm so fanatical about this, okay, that my son and I've taught him this, he got this from me, I won't even use the word. Now, this is quirky, okay? I won't even use the word bathroom. I'm to the point now where I don't even use the word facilities. I've taught Shane that when one of us needs to be indisposed, we simply say, "I'll be back in a couple of minutes." Or better yet, say, "Nothing." Nothing. That's how fastidious I am about that private aspect.
Randy has to make an announcement every time.
And when they're not clean, it drives me bonkers. So that was actually an easy multiple choice for me.
You should check out a women's public restroom.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
You would not survive having to use a women's public restroom.
I've actually worked in enough restaurants where I had to go in when it wasn't open and clean the women's room.
Let me just say, there were often times when we lived in New York City where the alley was a lot cleaner and more inviting to use as a restroom.
Women's is always worse, oddly enough.
Let me just say, you wouldn't want to see the men's restroom on the third floor at Parks.
Don't get me wrong.
Speaking of parks, here we go with the next question.
Guys. Do not mistake me. I'm an incredibly down-to-earth guy. When I'm on a golf course with my pals, I drop an F-bomb about every third word. Okay, there's nothing prissy about me.
But you can go to the bathroom outside there.
But when it comes to those sort of things and those sort of bodily habits, I am very particular.
Wow.
That's all right.
All right. So number two. Here's question number two. So, Mark.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you for the first question, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go.
They get a little easier. So if you can only bet and watch one and only track for the rest of your life, and your choices are Parks, Gulfstream, Fairgrounds, or Fauner Park, what do you pick?
Fauner Park, no question about it.
I knew it. I knew you were going to go there.
Yes, you did.
There are a couple of reasons for that. I think I stated on a show with you guys before, I do not understand how guys can go to simulcast and do the Jack in the Box thing. One field crosses the wire, and they jump up to run and bet the next track.
Yeah.
What is your edge? If you don't have any insight particular to that race, if you don't think you know those horses, that surface, those trainers, those riders better than the general public, why in the world would you wager? Dude, I've been at this a long, long time, and the only way I can make money is if I show incredible patience, if I absolutely just forget about action bets. Only bet when I have a strong opinion and when I am sure that by virtue, not being some kind of a genius, but by doing the extra work, by watching the video, by keeping meticulous track bias notes, and by being familiar in large part with the horses and conditioners. And there's so much that you can know about a horse and a trainer that's not on the form. It's not there. It's not in ink, and it's not even between the lines. Okay? You watch a horse, you get an opinion of the horse. Some horses are common. They really don't have the will to win. They're going to lose when they should not. Other horses will generally outperform expectations. If you got a keen eye for thoroughbreds, you can pick up on some of these things. When you take thoroughbred trainers, okay, statistics don't tell the whole story, guys. In other words, two trainers might be, and I've said this before, two trainers might be 2 for 40, okay, in the same race. But unless you've got a history, unless you've got a wealth of back knowledge about this circuit and those respective trainers, you're not going to know which one of them has probably outperformed expectations and may never win a race again, and which one of them is in an incredible deep freeze and is so due to go on an incredible roll. Now, you can glean some of that from past statistics, and you can sort through and filter those statistics with something like Formulator under specific circumstances at specific meets for specific owners and on ad infinitum. But there's nothing like the computer between your ears. And if you know a circuit intimately, you're going to know a lot of that stuff that's not on paper. And plus, Gulfstream Park. So many invaders from so many different venues. To me, it's chaos. It is absolute chaos to me. Okay? Parks. The next race I hit at Parks or any Pennsylvania track would be my first one. Okay? Some tracks I just have a better knack for. Now, Fauner Park, that's my level of horse racing.
Sure.
It's no military secret that my expertise runs in that direction.
And to your point,
hands down.
You have to know. You have to know that you're not shouting out 864 every five tracks.
Jumping around.
It is true. You learn skip races and stay what you know. I mean,
you said that. Yeah, we had the last. When you were on off the rail with me and Randy, that's exactly
what you said. One of those tracks. And I'm not going to say which track, but I absolutely hate the graphics because you can't read them. You simply can't read the graphics.
I think I know what you're talking about.
If I can't read the graphics, I'm not going to bet the freaking track. Hello?
Right.
I know what you're talking about. All right, so we're going to number three. If you could watch one horse run, dead or alive, who would it be?
It would be Man of War.
That
might seem like the obvious answer. But you got to remember, he is shrouded in mystique unlike any other thoroughbred. Okay. And you can really go either way on this because I think there were like 3,500 registered thoroughbreds back when Man of War ran. So that's kind of like being the best athlete at a single A school.
Mm-hmm.
When you get up to 4A or like 5A, that's a whole different ballgame. I think there's a lot of mystique concerning Man of War. And I wonder also, beyond how he would have compared, how he would have competed against
the That's a good point. That's a good point.
I wonder about a couple of other things. I wonder if he would have been beatable with a rabbit by just throwing a rabbit in against him. Because, that, one neglected part of his history is Man of War was a speed horse. Man of War never passed a single opponent in any of his two-term races. Never. Never once. Man of War was a dyed-in-the-wool. Need the lead front runner. Now, I would be fascinated to see, and believe me, they get to the bottom of that real quick in modern day horse racing with so much manipulation of entries and so many rabbits thrown in and so many opposing outfits going to school on tactics and stuff like that and coming at a horse like him from different directions once the gate opened. He would have to prove very quickly they could either go 20 and change, 44 and change, 43 and win, or else he'd have to learn to rate back and pass somebody, which might have been within his abilities, but might not have been. And also, I am of the opinion that they stiffed Man of War in his only defeat.
Well, okay. he was backwards.
Yeah, it was backwards. Yeah.
He started him backwards.
And then if you read the full chart, the Man of War was a bad actor at the break, and the break was some kind of a web, a barrier back then.
No, they just dropped the line.
Okay, yeah, it was like Man of War is notoriously misbehaved before the start of his races. But if you read the whole chart, you can't chalk the whole loss up to him being turned backwards. The jock's weaving all over the place. He's inside, then he's outside. He's inside again. He checks again. He swings wide again. It just has a bad smell to me. And you got to remember back then when most of the action was with bookmakers, all the action. You know how much those guys stood to make?
They
probably laid 1 to 100 on Man of War.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 1 to 50, 1 to 100.
Well, Randy,
weren't you rich when he lost?
Randy, weren't you in high school plus, then, Man of War?
I remember Man of War. I skipped my junior year out of biology.
It is a little known postscript to the whole Man of War legend that his trainer, a guy named Louis Fustel, he died in nearby Salem, Ohio, which is really close to Mountaineer. It's probably 40 minutes away at most. And he was interviewed by a local newspaper over there before he passed away at a ripe old age. And he did finally say in public, where people suspected for decades and decades and decades that Johnny Loftus, who rode Man of War, did confirm to him, almost in tears, that he did stiff Man of War. Years and years
really?
Later. It's coming from the trainer who certainly has an axe to grind. He never wanted to see Man of War lose. And that is hearsay, because we never heard Loftus say it. But his trainer, Louis Fustel, did go on record and never made national news, because nobody cared, okay? Hmm. And there was nobody there to confirm it either. And nobody follows the Salem, Ohio newspaper sports section.
Hearsay, right? Hearsay.
Did say that Loftus admitted to him decades later that he did stiff Man of War in Man of War's only
race. Wow.
So, yeah, that's the horse I like.
Wow.
That's crazy. All right, Man of War. Okay, so if I gave you – here's my next question. If I gave you a $2 million two-year-old right now – who would you have train him or her, dead or alive?
Probably Ben Jones.
Okay.
Can't make an argument there.
The urban legend said that he watched 100 Breeze one morning and walked straight over to Nashua and said, he's the one I want. I think he'll do. Ben Jones.
Ben Jones, that's a good
one. Iconic Ben Jones. Ben Jones, the same guy who won 6 in a row with a horse, with a bug rider on, somebody going over to him and saying, I like this business-like attitude. I like this callous nature. I really dig it. And so somebody went over and said, this kid lost his bug, Mr. Jones. After the second race, Ben Jones said, put our care on the horse. And the bug had won 5 in a row on a horse.
Yeah, 6 derbies for Ben Jones from 38 to 52. 6
Ben Jones,
derbies.
No question about it.
Yeah. All right, Ben Jones. All right. Here's the last one. This is the fun one. It's kind of like what the kids call like MF kill, but we're not going to do that one. Right?
Right.
Because I can't say those words now because we're whatever. I don't think I said kill. I might get in trouble with that. Anyway, so here's a question. So this is with the triple clowns, Mark, all right? You have to pick. So we're going to do 4 triple clowns, even though there's another one, but you don't know them. We're going to do 4 of them. That's myself, Sarah, Tom, and AJ. Now, you have to sign one of these people to everything I say, and you can't use the same person twice. So hear me out all the way through. So you have to pick one of us, but you can't pick one of us twice for these things. One has to handicap for you for a year. Another has to co-host your show with you. The other you figure will be in prison. And the last one will be, oh, you have to open a strip club with. So you have to pick a triple crown. You can't
move. Okay.
It's going to be Tom when it comes to handicapping. Okay, you would open the strip club with me, Randy, because I think you'd be great at it. You're a people person.
Yes, I got the good one.
Sarah's gonna do the show with me, and I suspect AJ's already in jail.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that was the easiest one, AJ.
Yeah.
That was quick, Mark. That was good. That makes total sense. Sarah does the show. Makes sense, too. Sounds a pretty good handicapper. I'll give
Sarah's
you that.
Sarah's the best on camera.
Yeah, and I'll be the co-host. You know what? If I could have wrote those answers, that would make sense.
You're kind of an entrepreneur, Randy. I think you're the driving force behind the whole clowns thing. So, yeah.
We'll be making it rain in our strip club.
All right. I don't know about that.
So, all right, guys. Well, that was it.
That was it.
Well, that was fun.
That was a lot of fun. Always fun with Mark.
That was always a long fun. Show. Our weekly show. That was awesome, Mark. Thank you so much, Mark Patterson. Mark, when can we see you next?
Tomorrow night. Right now, Mountaineer is running Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We will pick up Wednesday, the last week in May.
Okay.
Hopefully with the break in the weather we're getting right now, because it was sunny and dry today and yesterday as well. We're going to get more good weather, dry, sunny weather. Hopefully we'll be on the grass very soon. And that's kind of our signature asset, grass racing. And that will result in bigger fields.
We'll do if you're free a Tuesday in June, Mark, we'd love to get you on off the rail again to do your track.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be great. Yeah, we'll do that sometime.
Absolutely. We'll
AJ's
been texting me. AJ's mad that he didn't. AJ's mad that he didn't make it tonight.
Well, he's in jail.
He's not in jail yet. He might be. I don't know, actually.
Yeah, we don't know that.
But he did text me and say, you know, it was his late night working, so he was mad.
And who out there did not hit that superfecta that knows all four of you guys and knows me even remotely? Who did not nail every slot in that superfecta?
I don't get
who I was going to select for which test.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Mark, thank you so much for everybody out there. Check out Mark all the time over at Mountaineer because he is the man.
King of the Mountain.
King of the Mountain. Man of the Mountain. Did I call him the Man of the Mountain?
You always do, yeah.
All right, King of the Mountain, the Man of the Mountain.
King of the Mountain.
That would make Sarah the Queen of the Mountain or the police queen.
There you go. Boom.
There's an empty spot near Mark. I don't know why you're not there already in that booth. It's not COVID anymore. You need a co-host, Mark. And I'm saying, you know, Sarah's available. She can go to West Virginia.
Well, let me put it to you like this. California. If I would have lost a bet to AJ, I would have quickly offered an alternative, a compromise for Sarah to come on instead of AJ.
Yeah, that would have been very good
move. Much better move. Oh, goodness, yes. But on that note...
You're welcome.
Mark, thank you so much. Everybody out there, check him out.
Thank you, guys.
For us, Triple Clowns. See you later, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.